Capitan America che dà la palla, si chiude il triangolo fra lui e Giroud, ed è Christian Pulisic che segna un meraviglioso 2-0 USA.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. We have the head of the B team with us today, not Stefano, Lorenzo.
No. Stefano's been there. I mean, he was demoted, but he was never promoted in the first place, really. Bless him. But yeah, representing big time. Nice to be back, boys.
Stefano's gone like full Siena or like Parma, demoted to third division.
He's gone bankrupt.
Bankrupt individual, morally. But yeah, it's good to have a bit of a freshen up in the lineup, bit of rotation, which will be a theme of today's episode, no doubt, as we have four games once again to talk about. They're coming thick and fast. We're in the middle of a span of 7 games in 22 days. So if ever you think that we play too much football nowadays, I don't know what you're talking about. Not enough of it. We've got 2 games to recap, those being the Cagliari game in midweek and the Lazio game from the weekend. And then we've got 2 games to preview, the Dortmund Champions League encounter in Germany, and then we've got Genoa away from home as the last game before the international break. So we'll have 2 weeks of respite and no doubt more players picking up injuries. Let's dive into it, shall we? Cagliari away.
Oh. Well, I fucked up.
Oh, there we go. That's blunder number one. That's big. Yeah. So Cagliari qualified for the Champions League this year. midweek trip to Sardinia. You ever been to Sardinia, Lorenzo?
Never. I would love to go. I really would.
Yeah, me too.
I have.
You have, yeah.
I have, yeah.
The resident Italian in the chat, yeah.
I'm the real one, yep. That's me.
That's a me.
It's a me, Anthony.
So we all predicted a win in the preview episode for this one, and I think with good reason. Cagliari have struggled since they came back up. Going into this game, they'd only scored 1 goal. And they were finding it difficult to grind out those results that they were able to last season in Serie B under Claudio Ranieri. Zito Luvumbo had scored their only goal up until this point, and of course he got the opening goal in this one. It looked like being one of those nights when we dominated the game for the first 25-30 minutes of it, and then with their first real meaningful attack, Yassine Adli, and we're going to praise him a lot in this episode, no doubt, so we'll get the bad thing out of the way. He coughs up possession in a dangerous area, and then Luvumbo gets a feedback from Nandez, fires it in at the near post to make it 1-0. Where does the blame lie with this one? Is it all on Adli? Should Sportiello do better at his near post? Tomori kind of got spun a little bit as well. Is it collective failure?
Yeah, I think you just named everyone responsible. Yeah. If you got to give it percentage-wise, I'd say Adley's the guy that really lost his man there, but like, I don't want to give him like a mass majority of the blame. You know, like Sportiello should not be beat at near post like that. Tomori got spun and he shouldn't. You know, he's a top defender, or so we claim. And Adli hasn't played. You know, this was his first start for us since the one game last season. I can't remember who it was, but
a runner away.
It was only his second start in his Milan career and like third appearance overall. So, you know, it's hard to really say like, oh, he's at fault. Like, I definitely haven't thought he's been like great world beater level that I'm seeing a lot of adoration for him on Twitter. But I don't think he's been bad. You know, he's impressed me, just not like overwhelming, you know, and that's OK for a guy that's had the amount of minutes he's had. He's not supposed to come out and be messy right away. Like, it's okay to have some growing pains and develop. He's still a young guy. But yeah, I mean, he got beat there, and it's not like it was just him. Luvumbo was smoking all of us. He was doing everyone
he
like that. So
player, by the way.
Yeah, but Dare's been waxing about him, and I see it now. He moves me. So
yeah. I mean, he's traditionally a right winger, but he's been playing as part of a front two because Ranieri's been using a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2. And I must admit, it looks like he can really do a job. Like, he can hold his own physically. You saw that with the way he won the ball back for his goal. And he's got a howitzer of a shot on him. It might not always go anywhere near the goal. You know, there was that one that he sliced out for a throw-in. But he's one of those players that just seems to make things happen. Like, whenever the ball's near him, something happens. And, you know, we've got Giroud up front, for example, as a focal point. Nothing happens. It's like playing with 10 at times, unfortunately. But yeah, Lorenzo, Adley got to be stronger. Are you going to rip into him as a fellow curly-haired boy?
I think, you know, from a tactical point of view, it shouldn't really have been his man. You know, Tomori, for me, is the reason he got spun was the issue. You know, you guys covered it. Also, Sportiello, I mean, that was a really weak attempt at a save. I think if Mike's there, I don't think it's a goal. That's not taking it away against Lavumba. I think it was a great shot. Just the reactions were a little bit slow if you looked at the replay. But yeah, I mean, Adley was a little bit weak. Doesn't matter if it's not his man. It was there. It was confronted with him. He should have been a little bit stronger there. But yeah, I can't disagree with what you guys said. It was difficult. I think mentally, Adley's done really well to have basically been cut off for 2 years and just been like, yeah, you might get a chance, you might not. And then to suddenly been chucked into the deep end, playing a holding position, which isn't even his natural position, to at least be like a par. I think he's been a bit better than that, but at least a par. I think that's fantastic. And he's still young. So yeah, really
good stuff. Reports after the game or this weekend, whenever it was, but that Adley turned down offers from 3 different clubs because he wanted to stay specifically at Milan to prove himself here. And
did they say which clubs it were, by the way?
They did.
Frankfurt, Sevilla, and I think it was Salernitana, where Paolo Sousa is.
Two of those are pretty decent clubs, you know. So
yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about it. If I'm him, are you necessarily going to get guaranteed game time there? Maybe they could pitch it to him. Like maybe the Bundesliga was appealing to him. I don't know, but. There was an interesting quote after that game against Cagliari where, as part of the entire interview, Adley revealed that Tomori said to him, after Pioli told him he's not going to get much playing time, he was like, what are you going to do? And Adley said, I'm going to stay here and show everyone the kind of player that I am. And I like that. There's not enough of that in football, really. Yeah. You know, not taking the easy way out. He's like, I want to be here. I'm going to try and make it work. And I think I'm with you, AJ. I think people have gone a bit overboard with the Adley mania stuff. I don't think he's been above a 6 out of 10 in either of his 2 starts, but you can see the positives that he brings. Mm-hmm. He's much more courageous in possession. He is the player that's going to advance the ball through the thirds.
And let's not forget that we signed him as a 10 and now he's playing as a 6. Yeah. You know, I've called for that change with other players in the past, but it's still a tough change. You know, it's not the easiest adjustment to make, and he did it. And the fact that, like you said, he has that mentality of I'm just going to show him what I can do and earn this spot. You know, you look at players in the past like Locatelli who were hyped for us. Well, we signed a 32-year-old Belia who was better than him in that moment. And he said, I don't want to be second. I'm going to Sassuolo. Like, you know, that's not Adley. Adley has big cojones. So. Big up.
He does. Yeah, absolutely. And now we move on to more positive stuff. As I say, when they went 1-0 up after we'd had a period of dominance, you start to think, is it going to be one of those nights, classic Milan, where we fail to take our chances and we get punished for it? Are we going to give them their first win of the season? Like, all those thoughts running through, pretty quickly answered by 2 quick fire goals before half time in the 40th and the 45th minute. The first, they came in really similar ways, to be honest. Obviously, one was open play, one was a set piece that was a well-worked routine. But essentially, what happened was, what's the keeper called? Radunovic, who had been in inspired form up until that point, parries 2 low crosses into the path of our awaiting forwards / defender. The first one, it was Pulisic who drilled it low and hard across goal and, yeah, parried straight into the path of... Noah Okafor, who takes a good touch to open up that channel, the empty net, and slams it in. Very nice happy ball, for him. His first start of the season, and he gets his first goal. Also, his first goal since November in any league game. So people who didn't realise how much he'd struggled to score, he's had an injury as well. But at Salzburg, he wasn't exactly prolific. 9 league goals was his top tally, I believe. So to come and first start for us, get such an important goal and an important time in the game. Very happy for him and good number 9 instincts.
Yeah. 3 talking points for this goal for me. First one, Pulisic again creates the goal. It's a shame it doesn't count an assist because obviously the keeper got a touch, but is what it is. Also, that's exactly how Okafor's second goal came, with Liao making the exact same run and cutting it into him. And then third point, I think it's kind of funny that we're talking about Okafor. We signed him because we needed more mobile striker, someone who's going to move a lot. and both his goals have been very poacher-esque tap-ins. So, but that's just the nature of the game, you know?
That is a very good point, yeah.
I'm a big fan. I might be getting a 17 jersey pretty soon here, although I've already bought three this year, so waiting for that fourth kit to drop soon.
Milan's social media game has really stepped up, and one thing that they did do was they did sort of a throwback video to when Okafor scored against us in the Champions League, and Liao commented on the post saying, "Better see you scoring goals with my jersey soon." Mm. And then, of course, he arrives, he takes the 17, and they decided to milk that, which was good to see. So, yeah, happy for him. Happy for him. Yeah. Okafor, nine of the future, eh, Lorenzo?
Yeah, the ball roll was lovely. The ball roll was, I really liked that. I mean, he didn't even need to do that. You know, he just opened it up onto his left and then poked in with that foot or with his right, but nice composure. Yeah, I think we were just talking before we started the pod. Okafor looks good. He does look good. How Pioli's going to manage that transition with Giroud just, I don't know, just being a lump, but a useful lump. Statistically, not visually, he's not, but statistically he still is. It'd be really nice to see Okafor get like a string of two or three games and see how he's cracking on from the start. But yeah, it is ironic, like you said, the two goals he's got have been absolute tap-ins.
He's got to be there.
But that's good. That's not a bad thing.
I mean, I went on a bit of a rant last week, and I thought it would attract more hate than what it actually did. Basically saying, you know, Giroud hasn't got an open play goal since the first game of the season. Scored three penalties. Yep, you've got to score penalties. I'll never detract from that. But if you list what he can actually offer that a number nine should offer, especially an old-fashioned centre-forward like him, he doesn't tick any of those boxes anymore. His hold-up play is not there. There's a compilation doing the rounds on Twitter of all the giveaways that he made against Lazio, which we'll come on to. He doesn't really win anything in the air anymore. When he does drop deep to try and either cut passing lanes, press, or, you know, when in possession, he's then 10 yards behind the ball when we managed to get it to the wings, where Okafor was, you know, on hand to score both of his goals. He doesn't really offer anything apart from the odd penalty, it seems. And what Okafor can offer might not be a very big list either. You know, he's not used to playing as a lone centre forward during his career. He plays more on the left or in a front two as like a second striker. But the list of what he offers is certainly bigger than zero. So that instantly makes him an upgrade in my eyes. And I hope we see more and more of him, especially with sort of Jovic breathing down the necks of both of them. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he comes back fired up and when he's in 100% health and can contribute as well.
There's one thing I just want to add, though, on the Giroud thing. I think it's a lesser important point, but it is something that's worth knowing. Giroud, because of the player that he is and the size that he is, he does occupy 1.5 to 2 defenders, at least in the attacking phase, which isn't like, I'd much rather have a mobile striker that's, you know, able to go run through the passages and things like that, run through the channels rather, but it is useful. I can understand why Pioli in the big games wants to have a player like Giroud still, even though I agree it's glaring he has declined massively, but he does kind of occupy defenders' time and space.
And he does a lot of work as well off the ball. Mm. You know, he does press a lot for a 37-year-old.
He
is pretty useful, actually, at cutting out passing lanes, which is something Pioli has made it clear he wants. But also, it's easy to forget that Okafor comes from a team that pressed as well. You know, Salzburg are rampant when it comes to their pressing system, so he understands it. It'd be interesting to see how that's managed moving forward. And then the goal to make it 2-1 just before half-time, again, perfect timing, really, was a corner routine. Now, we've seen so many of these outswinging balls headed away at the far post, not beating the first man and stuff. Just drop a little short pass, and then next thing you know, Reinders is slipped in behind, fires it low across goal, and again, Radunovic can only get a hand to it. And Okafor was about to tap it in, but Tomori said, "Nope, I'm having that. Thank you very much." Centre-forward's goal from Fick as well. Loved the emotion of his reaction as well. I think it's obvious with the way that he celebrated that goal and the way that he celebrated the wins, particularly with the clean sheets, that he knows that he's been under fire. You know, so all the emotion came out and it was fantastic to see. Not much to say on that apart from, well done. Good time to score.
Yeah. I mean, it was can't argue with it, right? Like, it was just a good, good goal from a defender. Like, you're happy to see it. It's interesting to see. Like, obviously, we know a goal is a huge confidence boost for every player, obviously. More so for strikers, because that's their one job. But it's interesting to see how much it works even for a defender, that they're just like, I could do fucking anything out here, you know? And we saw that, because Tomori's next game, which we'll talk about against Lazio, I thought he looked nearly, you know, unstoppable. I thought he was one of the best on the field. Yes. When was it? Not yesterday, the day prior. So, yeah, it's just, it's great to see what it does for the confidence. And look, we keep this ball rolling, you know, that derby defeat is already long forgotten in my mind if we continue this.
Yeah.
And it was also then followed up by Inter losing to Sassuolo. So
that was so nice.
Yeah.
Made it irrelevant really quick, huh?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Yeah.
Very quick. Yeah.
Third goal then. Screamer. That's the only way to describe it. Absolute clean as a whistle strike. Rocket. Tracer bullet, laser beam, whatever you want to describe it as. It was. I'm so buzzing for Loftus-Cheek as well, because I think he's done a job in the first few games of the season that has gone sort of under the radar in terms of the ground that he's covered and the players that he's occupied. And I felt like a goal was coming for him, to be honest. And yeah, what a way to score it. Buzzing for
him. Oh, it was awesome.
Assist from Pulisic.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah,
I mean, and that was a great assist, obviously, from outside the box, about halfway up, not quite the byline, just cutting straight in and finds this man on the top of the box and he puts it home. You know, it's a classic routine goal. You've seen that in, you know, you see that type of goal quite a few times every single year and they never get old. They're always impressive. You always, you know, like you're always like, damn, look at that. And I don't think he needed that goal. But he wanted it, and he got it, and he deserves it. You know, I've been more impressed with Loftus-Cheek in our midfield than Reinders. I just think his physicality has been so great for us. And I'm sure we'll get to his injury soon and how it's not that big of a deal now, apparently. But, yeah, he just he's been the guy that's impressed me the most out of all the new signings. I mean, I got his shirt on the wall right now, so very happy with this. This was a great game for all my picks. I'm pretty thrilled.
Tonali's legacy, it doesn't scare him.
Tonali
doesn't exist.
It's a joke.
I got set up for this one because I can't remember why I missed this goal, but I missed it. And I remember asking in the chat, oh, is this goal any good? And I think like three or four people just went, tap him. I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, yeah, whatever. I then watched it about 2 hours later. And I was like, what the fuck? Tap him. That was unreal. Yeah, this is a fantastic goal. One of the cleanest strikes I've seen. And I love a goal that is like low and hard, almost skims the grass. I don't know why. Just so satisfying. Yeah, unstoppable. Yeah. Loftus-Cheek has been... I was also, because I can't speak for Anthony here, but I know Ollie watches Premier League. Being in the UK, you know, you just do absorb it. And Loftus-Cheek has always been like, okay. And I was really not excited about him coming. He's been fantastic. He's been really, really fantastic. And I can see... sort of, I think it was the Sarri years at Chelsea, wasn't it? When he was like unplayable in Champions League. I can see where that player is. Now, hopefully we can get that back and he can get back from the injury. We'll talk about it in a moment. But yeah, fantastic goal. What a player.
That was something that I was also told by a couple of friends that I have that are diehard Chelsea fans, that when we were originally linked, I was like, yeah, you know, it's cool. It's whatever. I don't know how it's going to turn out. And then they're like, nah, like there was a few seasons under Sarri. Well, I guess one under Sarri, but there were a few seasons for Loftus-Cheek's career at Chelsea where he was, like he said, unplayable. The next big thing in the Premier League, everyone was touting him. And then he had the injuries and they just kept piling on and he never found that form again. And then no one in Chelsea found that form. And that's why a lot of our new signings were A, cheap, but also not very hyped. And now they're performing pretty well. And I've gotten the told you so text quite a few times, but. Just going back to that Loftus-Cheek goal, and you mentioned, you know, getting played in the chat. Well, I have another screenshot from the chat. Everyone's favorite guy, Stefano, he said, bit odd leaving on Ruben Loftus-Cheek, but whatever. Immediately thereafter, you see Oliver in all caps. Oh, wow. So I said, was it Stefano? Was it? Because he obviously scored. And that's a running gag on my Twitter. You'll see he really likes to slate someone seconds before they score a great goal. So. Just keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. I think in while actually watching the game, I said he looks to be kind of hobbling here. He'd probably be the first midfielder that I'd bring off, and then minutes.
Yeah, later, I said it too.
Get it edited out. Yeah, I'm buzzing for him, and important, I think, for him to, well, not important, as you rightly said, AJ, it wasn't that he needed this goal, because we're not expecting 10 goals a season out of our LC. But when he gets confidence going, and I think a bit of Serie A help, you know, given that he's one of the most physical players in the league, and he'll be able to exploit that, we could be looking at that amount. You know, if he really gets, if he stays fit and the confidence keeps flowing through, then we've got a real bargain there with him, definitely. And it fits with our strategy of buying in the dip as well. And I think we found that with Pulisic as well. And yeah, happy days, really good. There wasn't really much that happened after that. We went into game management mode, as you'd kind of expect. Sort of as we did against Verona, really. Just manage the clock, make a few subs, keep things fresh. Luvumbo continued to be a bit of a menace. There were a couple of hairy moments, but really the contest was done from the 3-1 goal. And yeah, we escaped with 3 points, 3 goals, happy days. Top of the match and flop of the match.
I think there's a lot of options for top. And, you know, there's no wrong choice, really, except maybe the one I'm going to pick. But I'm going Pulisic. He had an assist. He might as well have had another assist with the first goal. Look, his passing led him down quite a bit in this game. So it's ironic that I'm picking him for 2 assists, essentially. But that's the one thing that I keep seeing go wrong with him is his passing. It's just not there. And I think it comes down to chemistry, because it's always when he's about to make a run, expecting a give and go or something like that. And it's just to the wrong guy, or the guy's not where he should be for this pass that Pulisic wants. But at the end of the day, he still created 2 goals. And without those 2 goals, it's a 1-1 game and we don't win. So to me, it's got to be Christian.
Lorenzo, you can go next. Enjoy.
Yeah, this game is an interesting one. There's lots of choices. I mean, I think I'm going to pick Okafor, because I think Ollie's going to pick Loftus-Cheek potentially. Only picking Okafor because I liked his positioning. I liked his busyness, and I think he did well with, you know, I just think he did really, really well. Not much more to add on this one. I think, yeah, definitely my top for this match.
I was going to pick Okafor as well.
Okay,
I liked him in the first half, because especially when Cagliari went 1-0 up, it would have been easy to kind of fall into the trap of letting them get men behind the ball. And that's when you really struggle with a more mobile, like less physical number nine. But he kept being dangerous. He kept being a menace up front. He had that header that landed on the roof of the net. He had a shot inside the box that was saved by Radunovic that he probably should have done better with first time. So then when he got his goal, it was honestly a just reward. And he did fantastically, you know, for his first start for us in a position that he's probably not his favourite by his own admission, to score a goal. And it was an important goal. He led the line well. And yeah, I guess honorary mention to RLC for his first goal for the club as well. And we move on to flop of the match.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough because, like, we dominated this game pretty much start to finish, outside of, you know, that little spell where they got their goal in a few minutes after. So I feel bad picking anyone, but I guess I'm going to pick Sportiello. I mean, no one else made a big enough mistake. You could say Adley, but I think the rest of his game overall was so much better than getting spun one time that I feel really bad picking him. And then obviously Tomori got a goal, so I think that overrides his little miss on that goal as well. And then that leaves you with just Sportiello missing the near post. And I don't even think he had a bad game. I thought he had a lot of good saves as well. It's one of those games where you have a good performance overall, so you got to pick someone. And, you know, unfortunately, he's the loser this week for that.
Yeah, actually, that's perfect. I would only have picked Sportiello as well, because, like you just said, it's the only mistake that I think, because he's not a top player in his position, he would have made. If you're a top keeper, you just don't get beaten in the near post. Just doesn't happen. Yeah. So I agree with you there. I think only because his mistake was arguably big, but the rest of his game was fine. And no one else was glaring, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm going to do something I rarely do and pick someone who came off the bench. Coming on at an important moment where we needed to be careful in possession and manage the game well, Pabega was fucking dreadful.
Oh, I forgot he even played.
Oh my God. He gave the ball away so much. Like, you know, he had a couple of good moments as well where you think that's the role for him, to to come off the bench when we've got a lead, to add a bit of physicality, protect the ball, run with it sometimes. He had a kind of one where he sort of beat a man, and then he had one where he beat a man near the byline and dribbled it straight out of play.
Yeah, that was fun. Away
an attacking throw in. And it's like, oh, come on. We need a bit more than that. And do you know what? It wasn't a 3 out of 10 for me. It really wasn't. It was probably just a 5 out of 10 in a sea of 6s, 7s, and 8s. So he just stood out to me as being like, that's not what we need from you. And it could cost us against better opposition. But yeah, I don't normally pick a player off the bench because...
But, I can't believe I missed an opportunity to slate Pobega, and instead
you have the Dortmund game.
Yeah,
I got plenty of opportunities.
There's opportunities in the bank. Let's move on then. Let's do the Lazio home game. So when you're looking at the start to the season that we have, obviously we had the Roma, Inter away back to back, and you've got this Lazio game before we've got Juventus and Napoli. All those coming inside the first 10 league games of the season. The Lazio home game is probably the one sort of head-to-head match that you fear the least because of how good our record at home against them is. We've lost once to them in the league at San Siro since 1989, which is mental. We beat them comfortably last season. They'd had a bit of a stuttering start, having won only two of their opening six games. And I felt we all felt confident going into this one, I think. I said 3-1 in the prediction. It was a two-goal margin. Few nerves on the day of the game. I thought, here we go. We're gonna find a way to completely fuck this and get rid of all the momentum that we built after the derby. But this really was probably our best performance of the season for me. Even better than the Torino home game. You've got to factor in the opponent. I still think Lazio are a good side. They're probably going to be top six, I would say. Whether they've left themselves too much to do already in terms of getting into the top four, we'll see over the coming weeks. But they've not had a great start to the season. But they're still a tough side. They're a well-coached and organised side. And they made it tough for us in the first half. We were still the better team. I still felt like we were always in command of this game. And they never really had a period where they were on top at all. But our first real big chance of the half came right at the end. And that was when Reinders hit the post. It was gutted for him. He needs a goal. Well, he doesn't need a goal, but that was his moment. It was like it was a bit of CDK stuff where it's like, if you can't score that.
We need him to get a goal because if he doesn't get a goal, he's going to continue to take these fucking shots. And they're not necessary.
Oh my God, they're so weak. That's the only bad thing is shooting's weak.
He continues to take a shot or make a run towards goal when like he's got options. Like there are 2 to 3 forwards in front of him that are either open or probably open or like Liao's a little covered, but he could get the ball, you know? And he's just not making those passes because he wants it. And it's because he's afraid that Pioli's going to make him a six and he doesn't want that. None of us want that. And I get it. So give this guy his goal so we could just move it. Yeah, just pop the cherry.
Pop the cherry and then they'll come flooding through. That's just how it works.
So my viewing experience for this game was a little unique because, you know, you guys in the UK, I believe you had the blackout, right? So you guys had to miss the first 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I was in the UK because I also missed the first 15 minutes. I was, you know, not to brag, but took a Lamborghini on a track and had some fun. But so that made me 15 minutes late to the game. And when we got there, obviously missed the opening 15. And then the bar was showing Spurs Liverpool on every TV but ours. So they had the sound on for that. And I don't know if you've ever tried to watch a game while the sound for a different game is blaring.
Tough.
That shit throws you off. So when it was halftime for them, in my head, I'm like, all right, I'm listening to commercials. It's halftime. So I pull up my phone and start doing halftime tweets. And then I remember, it's the 76 minute right now. What am I doing? You know, like the game's in prime time. So I actually went home and watched the game over to the ire of my girlfriend because she had to go to the track with me and then the bar and then watch the game a second time. She was not enjoying it. But
it was your birthday, man.
You had a great day, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, overall, good game. I don't know if I agree it was our best performance of the season, but maybe that was just because the way I watched it was so shitty. But again, Pulisic, a goal. It was actually a horrible shot. It hit like shin ankle area and it just kind of bounced right at Provedel who spilled it. Let's be real, it was a keeper error. So we take those all day. And then obviously Okafor gets another one. Liao had the assist this time. Beautiful. And then they scored, and then it got called off. I predicted 2-1, so when they scored, I was kind of like, oh, cool. And then it got called off, and I was like, all right, that's fine, too. So happy with that.
It was clear. It was a weird offside, was that? Because it was almost as if everyone had stopped playing, and then Pedro decided out of nowhere to curl one top corner outside the edge of the box, and he starts celebrating, and none of his teammates are celebrating because the offside flag's been pointed out to him. Yeah, that was a good finish, that, though.
I will say, though, one funny thing, and sorry, this is kind of irrelevant to the game, but when Pulisic scored, obviously the Milan Club of DC, you know, rambunctious, we're cheering, we're screaming. So everyone in the bar is looking at us because it's all Spurs, all Liverpool supporters. Before we're even done celebrating our first goal, Liverpool scored. So then the other half of the bar explodes, and then we're really quiet because the other half of our table were Spurs people, because the TV behind me was Spurs and in front was Milan. So we were sitting together, and I was like, sorry, guys, I'm cheering during the Liverpool goal, I guess, because my team's still scoring. So,
And then the Milan and Liverpool fans all came together, shook hands, and danced.
You know what's funny is like half of the Liverpool supporters were wearing Arsenal shirts just there to spite Spurs.
That's an American thing, though. I don't think that would happen.
That is crazy.
It was just big hater energy. Yeah,
I've just been to the end of the road to get my haircut, and where I live is around the corner from Arsenal Stadium, but there's still quite a few Spurs. And as soon as I sit down, the guy next to me, he's cutting the hair of an Arsenal fan, and they're talking about the game because obviously there was some VAR controversy with that. And the barber's like, "Oh, you're not a Spurs fan, are you?" And I went, "No, but I prefer them to Arsenal." And the guy who sat in the chair getting his haircut goes, "Oh, fuck off." That's like the difference between Americans and UK fans. It's like, can become a reason to get beaten up over here, you know, if you say the wrong thing in the wrong place, whereas they're wearing the shirt of a rival. But it is what it is. One thing that I liked about this game, we scored two relatively normal goals. Like, we scored two goals that we worked well down the left side. Rafa did what he was supposed to do. He looked up and found an option. I just think that, like, the Verona game, okay, it was an open play goal, but it was a giveaway in a bad position, and we were allowed to go through. Cagliari, there was two sort of goalkeeper errors and then a shot from distance. I started to get worried that we're winning these games, but we're not really cutting teams open. There's a bit of fortune to all the goals that we're scoring. But the way that we stuck with it and the way that we kept going with our kind of patient build-up play, and we were pulling Lazio around, and the fact that that's what led to both of the goals that came in quite similar fashion, I was really happy with that, because you take a win any way it comes. If it had been a 90th minute penalty, I'd been like, yeah, great. It doesn't matter. We're three wins in a row. We're still moving. But you do want to see a bit of style as well as the substance. And I think in that second half, the way that we stayed patient, we didn't rush it. We didn't start launching balls into the box. We kept true to the way that we want to beat teams. Which is give it to Leao and hope for the best. But on a serious note, that first goal was it was a 27 play move from back to front. Maignan to the halfway line in four passes, then out to the left, back over to the right, to the left again, and next thing you know, Pulisic smacks it in to make it 1-0. Happy for him, and as you guys mentioned, Okafor kind of getting a goal in a similar way. He came off the bench, and I know perhaps the circumstances of the game benefited him a bit more, because Lazio were having to take a few more risks, and that left some space at the back for him to exploit. But again, just lends credence to the argument that he's doing things that Giroud is not. He's getting in dangerous positions. He's on the end of stuff for a start, you know. And I was really, really happy for him. Zlatan was there again.
Yeah, he had another meeting with Jerry, Verlani, and Scaroni was the other guy, right? Yeah,
Scaroni has just done an interview before we're recording this, and he said that he was told them that he's having a year off, so he's not coming back this season. But it's Zlatan. He's just done an interview with Piers Morgan, so that's airing on Thursday. No doubt we'll hear what his plans are for the future through that. But I don't think it's smoke without fire thing. I think the reason he's there is because there's stuff being talked about, a role for the future. Whether that really is true about him, you know, saying I want the year off, or whether it's just to throw cold water on some of the rumours, remains to be seen. But good that he was there, and he saw a win, so happy days. Anything to add? Lazio, yeah, just a bit crap. I was disappointed with them.
I was just kind of hoping, reminiscing of the amazing game we saw last season, right? That amazing goal we saw live. Lazio, yeah, I think we just got Lazio's number. I mean, there's a lot of... I always go into sort of like psychology with these things, and I'm a massive advocate for sort of like heritage and like, you know, I don't know why, I just massively am. And I feel like this is another example of when you have the better of a team, and you have done for so long, it is so much easier to get over the line every single time. It just is. And I don't have any quantifiable evidence to back that up, just like how Real Madrid always do well in the Champions League or Champions League club or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, this is another example of that. But for me, the biggest takeaway, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, the tops and flops in a moment, this was by far Tomori's best performance. I mean, he was like two defenders in one. He was brilliant. Even that Felipe Anderson shot early on, the seventh minute, I think it was, sixth or seventh minute. Mm-hmm. If Tomori, Felipe Anderson's actually quite a good player. I actually kind of rate him. If Tomori doesn't put him off, I think that could have been a goal or at least a corner or something. That was like brilliant defending by Tomori. And the pace, the turn of pace, because he was going the opposite direction, realised Kjaer's not going to get there. Kjaer did a pirouette like he always does. Like, what are you doing? He's doing a pirouette, turning around, realising, and then Tomori just sprints, goes across and just does enough to put him off. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And on the subject of that, I must mention as well, Florenzi made a really, really important block as well. Second half. That deserves a mention. Bodies on the line, stuff like that's what you need, not only for 3 points, but I mean, I get a massive hard on for clean sheets. Like, fucking, I just love an old fashioned clean sheet. Yeah, don't let the fuckers score, you know. And this isn't a bad attacking team. They scored a lot of goals last season. This season, okay, they're not really clicking. Immobile not starting probably helped. Although I thought Kjaer Tomori would just about have enough to kind of nullify Immobile.
That Castellanos was Kjaer playing, by the way?
Just to give Chao a rest, you know. We've got obviously, we've got Dortmund and Genoa before the break, but I think we want to leave a lot in the tank before the Juve, PSG, Napoli triple header.
Makes sense, yeah.
And, you know, you've got to... I guess there's a matchups thing, basically. I think Pioli gambled and thought, well, if it's either Immobile or Castellanos, neither of those are going to have the beating of those two for pace. You know, Kjaer one-on-one, maybe anyone would beat him, but having Tomori next to him is totally different to when he had Chao next to him in the derby. Like, that recovery pace is there if it's needed. I must admit, I thought we did a good job on Zaccagni as well. Doubled up on him when necessary, got a bit of help from midfield because he is their main threat to me. Every time I watch Luis Alberto, who's probably been their best player, certainly best midfielder so far this season in terms of his output, every time I watch him, I think he's trash. Like, I just don't get it at all. Like, he's firing shots into the stand. It looks like he's not arsed at all.
Yeah, lazy player.
He only scores bangers. Every goal is a banger. That's why he's rated, honestly, because you see the highlights and it's just outside the box curlers, top bins every time. But then you watch the game and it's like, that's one out of 20 shots, you know?
There's an interesting arc with Lazio as well, and in terms of us playing them. And I know, Lorenzo, what you were saying about us having a number on them at home, we have a number on them without a doubt. But obviously, we lost 4-0 at the Olympico back in January, and they butchered us, to be honest. It could have been worse than that. It was a horrendous performance. There was so much space between the lines. The defence were exposed time and time again. We really, really struggled. We were put to the sword in that game. But then the game you guys were at, 2-0, I was expecting so much more from Lazio, but we controlled and commanded that game and we fully deserved the win. And then this game was exactly the same. So we've taken a step forward against Sarri sides. Just need to do it against Simone Inzaghi's lot now.
I think Lorenzo's right, though. We have had their number for quite some time now. Obviously, the January game is an anomaly. I put an asterisk towards any game from last January just because that was a whole collapse of the whole team. I don't know what the hell was going on there, and I think we've definitely gotten out of that slump. I do have a bit of quantifiable evidence for you there, Lorenzo, and it's not good, but Inter beating us 5 times in a row, and it just gets worse every time.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's it works negatively and positively, right? You know, there's a mental block there to a degree.
No, you're right. I mean, Cagliari, I think we've beaten them, 20 times in a row or something like that. I just pulled that stat out of nowhere, but I know it's been like 25 games.
Football is so mental.
We lost away to them in 2017.
That was the one out of like 25 games, I think, that we lost.
I mean, to lose like Lazio, yeah. No, I've seen us lose at San Siro to Lazio, but it was in the Cup semi-final. But to lose one home league game against them in since 1989, they're not mugs, you know. In that time, we've lost to Roma.
Team this season as well. Like
one loss out of 22 games against Cagliari. Yeah.
Yeah, who are actually
too far.
Yeah, well, let's do tops and flops. Top for me before someone nabs it, Tomori.
No, that's fine.
I just think, you know, he's had a bit of... He's had some shit for his performances last year. And he's been sort of labelled as being shaky so far this season as well. But I think the recovery has been there. As said with the celebration stuff, I think he's probably his own biggest critic, to be honest. He knows the levels that he's got to, and that Scudetto winning season in particular, he was the rock alongside Kalulu. He's our best defender on his day. It really is that simple. When he has his day,
love that.
Yeah. When he has his day, we have a really good chance of winning because we have a good chance of keeping a clean sheet, and then not many teams stop us scoring. So it is that simple. We are. In many ways, I can't remember who it was who said it. It was someone who said it in a column, but basically, Milan will go as far as Tomori takes us. And I think that's even more true than Liao, because it's been proven that when we rotate the attack, we can still score goals. You know, we made three changes to the attack for Cagliari and scored three goals. But we've got to be defensively resolute. And no Tomori for the Inter game, fucking whacked. You know, I think there is a real correlation there. So yeah, well done, Fick.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I'm not going to pick him just, you know, for that. An honorable mention for me is Florenzi. I've been so impressed with him this season. I think he's finally regaining his early career form, you know, before all the injuries. And honestly, at this point, I feel more comfortable with him at right back than I do Calabria. I don't know if that's going to last all season, but just in this little spell he's had right now, I've been really happy with everything I've seen from him. However, if I picked Pulisic as my man of the match last game for having essentially 1.5 assists, I got to use that same logic and pick Rafa for 2 assists this game.
I thought you were going to pick him again.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I have to pick Tomori because I was waxing lyrical about him just before. There are other players to pick, but I think he genuinely was a stalwart against Lazio. I think he was utterly sensational, and if he keeps this up, then yeah, we've got that defender that won us the Scudetto effectively. So yeah, long may it continue, Fick.
And also, well done, Kier. You know, he
only got spun once. He only got
I know.
Bad.
He struggled so badly in that derby, and I think obviously he was thrown to the Lions. He would never have started that game if Tomori was available and Kalulu was fit. He wouldn't have started. So there is that, but to recover from that, you know, he's experienced. He knows the ropes by now. Yes, he wasn't tested loads either, to be honest. Lazio did not look at their fluid best, to say the least. But yeah, it's a clean sheet and everybody played their part. So well done. And Adli coming off to a standing ovation was great to see. Okafor doing that sliding fold arm celebration. Yeah, that, man. That's cool.
That is cool. He did it with Salzburg, wasn't it? That's where he coined it. Yeah. And then Rafa was like, you got to do that again and whatnot. So, yeah.
Another honorable mention, Musa. I've been very impressed with Musa. And I'm surprised we didn't mention
that touch. Yeah, I've just met that touch. What was it knee, foot, knee, or whatever?
Something and then crazy like that.
It was really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish that went in. That would have been fucking nice.
He's technically really good. And I was watching the game with my girlfriend and she goes, why don't you just play him as a winger? I'm thinking, do you know what? There might be something in that. It's like he really can be a man.
He's played
wing back. He played right wing back.
He started as a right midfielder, didn't he? He's played right midfield, right back his whole, like most of his career, and then he got moved in central. And that's probably because he was Valencia's like best player. And then, you know, if you're a good player, you've got to move in central, and then it's evolved from there. But he's clearly competent on the wing, clearly.
Well, he plays all kinds of positions. I mean, for the national team, he's a 6. Like, so he's a defensive mid. He's a box to box. He's a winger. He's a right back. Like,
he had a really good game against England as a 6.
And he's only 20.
Yeah, he's going to get better and better.
He could be a real coup.
It's another thing of like contextualized. I don't know. You look at Loftus-Cheek and Pulisic in addition to Giroud and Tomori. You get them out of a toxic environment give them a fresh start. And what do you know? They've got all the motivation and all the stimuli they need to go out and look like the players that Chelsea invested in. And then with Musa, we know Valencia have been a shit show for the best part of a decade now. Like, it's been a while since they hit those same heights of the 2000s. You take a really good player out of there, you put him in a better team, and what do you know? He all of a sudden starts flourishing. So, yeah, happy for him. And we're going to see more of him because Loftus-Cheek hobbled off in the second half with groin discomfort. I think he did well because it was at the stage where it was just discomfort and not an actual problem. Mm. He's looking at missing until the international break. So that'll be the Dortmund and Genoa games, and then we'll hopefully be back afterwards. So yeah, I let's use that as the, oh no, we've got to do flops.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, this is a tough one. It was a good performance. Giroud, actually. No, it's not tough at all. Giroud. He gave the ball away a lot. And yeah, to start such an important game and to be outshone by a guy we signed in the summer who's not even a centre forward. I'm losing my patience with him, to be honest.
I think he's done a lot for us and for our club, but it's time, man. It's just time. Everyone gets there. However, I'm going to take the opportunity that I missed with the last one and pick Pobega off the bench.
I don't think he played that much, did he? He played like 30 minutes, if that, right?
Same amount of time as Okafor and one okay. score.
So. Yeah, it's just true.
I mean, one's right. also coming on a striker, but...
Yeah. I have to pick Giroud as well. I don't think Pobega was bad enough. And I'm kind of giving him good karma because I know we're going to rely on him in the next couple of games, especially against Dortmund. So I'm kind of...
Scoring against Dortmund.
Yeah, like an absolute screamer. But no, Giroud's not done. I just think he is just clearly regressing now. But I think he's probably got enough. We just cannot keep him beyond this season. Like, for God's sake, if he has a good May, do not sign him an extension. Let him go to the MLS. Mm. Please, like, just let him go, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is the point that we all thought we'd get to, you know? Mm. The moment that you arrive at a new season with a 36-year-old, soon to turn 37 as you start in centre-forward, there's probably a few warning signs there. We chose not to make a massive investment in a centre-forward in the summer. I think if Taremi had been signed, it probably would be him, or at least it'd be alternating starts. But now we've got the right answers from Okafor. Maybe Pioli's just thinking... like, we've got a bit of energy here, you know, and especially given that in that Cagliari game, he moves Pulisic to the left so he can have Okafor down the middle and Chukwueze on the right. I think we might see that trident quite a bit moving forward because you've got a bit of everything in there. Let's move on. Champions League action is back. We have our second Champions League group stage game against Borussia Dortmund at the Signal Iduna Park. I really wanted to go to this one, but... I'm going to Chicago for the week at the end of this week, so I couldn't really make the two trips work back to back. But yeah, it'll be over 81,000 people there. It's one of those Champions League games that I feel like we've waited a long time for. Like, when you get back into the Champions League, you think, okay, I wouldn't mind a top German team just because of the atmosphere that you know you're going to get. And you generally, we have quite a good record against German teams, but also you know you're going to get a good game.
Especially
I think this will be... Yeah, I think this will be a really good game, to be honest, with two teams that are well up for trading blows. I think both teams knowing that what happens in the matches between us, you know, if one team takes 6 points from the other, then that is going to be that's going to be massive in terms of trying to rival Newcastle and PSG for those top two spots. The bit of team news we've got, Gazzetta reporting that because of RLC's injury, we're going to basically see a new look. Midfield trio, and Adli's going to get some rest with Musa, Reinders, Pobega as the three. They don't know yet who starts in the six role, but they're saying it's more likely to be Musa than Reinders, which I think is fair enough based on what we've seen so far. And yeah, the front three is going to remain the same. Chiao's going to come back in for Kier. I don't have any arguments with that team selection. Like, our hand's been forced a bit with the midfield, so it is what it is. It's four players for three spots, so we'll have to bring someone off the bench. But yeah,
that works for me. I think it makes sense to have Moose as a six. I mean, out of those three players, he probably has the most experience there. Maybe Pobega edges him slightly, but that's just because he's been playing longer, you know. But I think Moose is better at it. And look, like you said, this is a team that knows they need to win to advance through the group stages. You know, they got smoked by PSG. We obviously held Newcastle to a draw, so they're bottom right now. And they need a win. They need two wins against us if they want to go through, as do we against them. And it's a team in the Bundesliga who notoriously just go forward. They just, you know, they just attack. They don't really defend a whole lot. And I think that plays into our hands more than anything. You know, we hit quick off the break, off the counter. If they make a mistake, Rafa's going to be right there to run the pitch. Teo's going to do the same. Pulisic will know where to be. You know, it's still a similar system to his time there that hasn't changed a whole lot, even though they've gone through four or five managers or however many it's been. So I think we're actually pretty poised for a good game here. I'd be shocked if it's a clean sheet, but I could see this one being like a 3-1, a 4-2. Like, I think this is going to be a really fun game for the neutrals and hopefully a fun game for us as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good assessment. I have a thing against Bundesliga teams. I just don't think they can defend very well, like all of them, even Bayern, the modern Bayern, Tuchel's Bayern. I know Bayerns of the past have been pretty good defensively, but there will be goals. There's no way in hell this is a clean sheet game, like no way. I just think Dortmund also counter-attack massively, and they've also got a lot of pace. I think we should be worried about Donyar Marlon in particular. He has really good darting runs from the wing into centre. I think he's quite a good player. They haven't got Sabitzer, which is by far their best midfield player. Emre Can still starts for them, am I right in saying that?
Which is crazy.
Like, their midfield is not very good. That's why I do feel like Musa's going to be...
Is he older than Giroud?
No, I don't think so.
He's not. He's in his 30s. He's just not that good. There'll be a lot of goals. I think like a 4-2 would be a really good gauge of this game. There will be a lot of goals, but I fancy us quite comfortably, to be honest. But that's because of my bias against...
He's 29.
Yeah, there you go. It just feels like he's been around for so long. I remember him playing for Liverpool when we were in the Prem. He scored an absolute screamer. One of them grass kissing volleys, you know, where it's sidewinds.
Yeah. He debuted for Bayern at 19. Mm-hmm. God damn. Okay.
So that's what, 10 years ago now? Wow.
Yeah.
Where does time go?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that explains why I thought he was so goddamn old. But
yeah.
So he's scoring the winner then.
Yeah. He's done it.
Dortmund so far this season have won 4 and drawn 2. They're unbeaten in the league. They've scored 12, so at an average of 2 per game. And they've only conceded 6, which gives them the joint best defensive record in the league. So that's not too bad. They've won
the joint best.
Six.
I rest
six.
My case.
I mean,
about
this it's league a better world. Defensive record than ours. Just there for context, and we did.
But we haven't been very good defensively. That's.
They only won one of their first 3 games, and their third game was a 2-2 draw at home against Heidenheim that a friend of mine went to while he was doing a bit of travelling around Europe, and they were 2-0 up after 15 minutes in that. Emre Can scored a penalty, funnily enough. And it was against Heidenheim, who'd just been promoted first season in the Bundesliga, and they bottled it. They drew 2-2, and he said that when they were under pressure, Dortmund, they just folded completely. So that's what we need to do. We need to try and get ahead in this game. We need to try and get the fans on their back a little bit. I don't think this is going to be easy. I've seen some fans expecting us to go and dog walk them because they're crap defensively, blah, blah, blah. I don't see them as that. I think they're a bit more pragmatic under Terzic, who's probably still lacking a bit of Champions League experience. Like, PSG dealt with them pretty comprehensively. They've got Daniel Marlon scoring goals. Marco Reus is still starting there. Feels like he has been for like 15 years now.
He's still banging in goals too. I think he scored like 2 of their last 3 or something.
He's got 3
in
the league.
That's the player I'm worried about most, Reus.
You know, I just wonder if they've made wholesale changes from last season, mentality-wise. Because they just needed a win in the last game of the season against a team that is their fate was already decided. To win the Bundesliga for the first time in 14 years, 12 years, something like that. Something crazy.
Yes.
And they fucking got destroyed. They bottled the hell out of it. That was one of the worst performances I've ever seen from a side who just needed one win to win a title. And if they carry that mentality, it sounds like against that newly promoted side Ollie just talked about, it sounds like they're still carrying a bit of that. So if we put the pressure early, it might be a quick night for us.
Hopefully.
I hope so. I'm just looking here, formation-wise, thinking, you know, how are we going to match up against them? In their last game against Hoffenheim, Dortmund played a 4-2-3-1. So not too dissimilar from where we were and where we are now. The game before that, they played a 3-4-2-1. Then the PSG first game in the Champions League, they played a 3-5-2. And then in a 4-2 win against Freiburg, they played a 4-3-3. And then in that 2-2 game against Heidenheim, they played a bit of like a 4-3-2-1 by the looks of it. So basically, they change formation every game.
If it's 3-5-2, forget it. It's an 8.
Yeah, that's what you should do. If Edin Terzic has got any, if we were to be downed by another Bosnian man called Edin, then we might as well just fold as a club.
3-5-2.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. Like, they fielded a different lineup, different formation every single game. So I don't know what insight to give on that front apart from, yes, let's watch out for Marlon and Royce, who's been playing more centrally. Schlotterbeck's a decent centre-back. If Hummels starts, then we've got to target him. If it looks like Hummels is going to start, then you've got to play Liao and Okafor. Let's just go mobile, beat them on the dribble and hope for transition chances. Prediction, goals. I don't see this as an easy win at all. In fact, I'm erring on the pessimistic side, and I think that we're going to struggle with the intensity and with a bit of a makeshift midfield. But 1-1.
I'm going to go 3-1. I think it'll be a fun game. Firecracker, if you will.
3-1 to us.
Yeah.
When was the last time you predicted a win, Ollie? I just, you know, come on, man.
I predicted 2 wins last week.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. I like the 4-2 that you mentioned, Torgrud, so I'm going to go with that. Why not? I think it's going to be a lot of goals, but to us, 4-2 to us. It's a scoreline you don't often see. Two attacking teams. That's
If we had, I think as well, if we had 4 points on the board out of 6, you know, from our first 2 games, things are very much in our own hands there. You know, you think if we can take 4 off PSG, go draw a win and win at home against them, maybe. I know it's easier said than done, and I think that this group is going to go right down to the wire. I think there's a real chance.
I don't know why they get a draw at PSG. I just feel it. I don't know why.
I don't know. I think it's going to get wrapped up. I think PSG is going to, you know, walk this league. And if we just beat Dortmund twice, I think it's going to be insurmountable. You know, I think that's going to be kind of settled.
I feel very confident in saying Newcastle will beat Dortmund twice. So the pressure's then on us to match. And our last game is away against Newcastle. So there's a realistic scenario where we go there having to either draw or get a win to go through. And that would be pressure. But also, I don't think PSG are home and host yet at all. Like, they've been really up and down in the league, and a 2-0 win against Dortmund at home, a team that everyone in the group will expect to be at home, I don't think it makes them absolute favourites to go through. But they probably are on paper, with Mbappe and whatnot. Let's move on and do the Genoa game as the final one of the episode. We've not got tons to go on for this one. Obviously, this is how it goes when we've got 2 games to preview in the episode. We don't know what's going to happen with the Dortmund game. We don't have any reports about rotation. There could be injuries. Let's hope not in the Dortmund game. But my guess is, with this being the last game before the international break, I know we'll have a lot of players that will fly around and whatnot. We have to end this with a win to hopefully keep pace at the top of the table, and therefore we won't have a heavily rotated 11. That would be my guess. I think we'll field a pretty strong team in this one. But we won't risk anyone like Loftus-Cheek. There's no need to do that. I can't really add much more on the team news front, because we don't know what's going to happen between now and then. But Genoa back in the big time. I was one of the people that thought that they might struggle this season, even though they made a couple of smart signings like Retegi, who's banging the goals in. They're doing pretty damn well. They are mid-table, which is probably about the best that they could have hoped for. They've beaten Lazio 1-0 away. They drew 2-2 at home to Napoli. They beat Roma 4-1 at home. They've acclimatized pretty well.
Yeah, they've done well. And I think Retegi is a really big coup for them. I was nervous about him just because he was young, coming from South America, a lot of hype, you know, is he going to perform? It seems like Genoa's done it again. You know, they keep signing these people who are nearly nobodies. Obviously, he had some recognition on the international stage, but overall, young kid, not much top flight experience, and he's performing. So hopefully they continue that, but not next week. Want him to have a bad game here, but yeah, the one thing we know is that Loftus-Cheek isn't going to play, right? And then the rest is probably going to decide itself based on fitness levels and injuries after Dortmund game, but.
Goodmanson, I would say, is a candidate for their player of the season as well. Like, whenever I see him, he looks like a live wire. He's the only player, I believe, in Serie A who has more completed dribbles than Leao. So
far.
Doing well. So far, yeah. Cream rises to the top. Should we be worried about this one, Lorenzo? Banana skin?
I actually disagree with you, said about non-heavily rotated 11. I think... it will swing either way. It probably will go the way that you've suggested. But I'd like to argue that Pioli has kind of flicked a switch and he's kind of realised that now, okay, we have got depth that we can rely on and it's going to be heavily tested in the next couple of games, namely, obviously, against Dortmund, In a big game, we're going to have to put a lot of the bench players on there. We've got no choice. And if they perform well, I think it's another chance to give those players even more game time. Because we're going to get 2 weeks off anyway. And we know for a fact a lot of those players are not going to be international duty. So they're less likely to get injured. Because let's be honest, we are guaranteed one injury for one of our big players in the international break. And a lot of ours, because of the quality of players that we have, are playing for the national team, which is great. And a lot of these young guys aren't. So not with all of them, but potentially I'd like to see actually quite a heavily rotated starting 11. I'd like to see Okafor. I don't want to see Giroud. I want to see Musa. I want to see all those players. I want to see them, but I think we'll be fine.
Quick stat correction for you, Ollie, because you said Goodmanson's the only guy above Leao. Leao was actually in fifth in completed dribbles.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's Matias Sule from Frosinone in first. Goodmanson tied for first. Samardzic after that, and then Almqvist.
It was before the weekend that he was.
Yeah.
Second to good.
He's only three dribbles behind first. It's just there's a lot of them up there.
And Samar's ditch was one move. I saw him do four dribbles in one move and had a shot on target. So that's highly inflated.
Baller. I'd like to praise Genoa for the summer business that they've done as well. If you're gonna come up, then you might as well make smart signings to try stay in the division. I don't think Cagliari have done that. I think their recruitment's been a bit all over the place. They haven't invested. Genoa signed Giuseppe Martinez from Leipzig, new starting goalkeeper. Aaron Martin from Mainz, Dragosin and Kone de Winter from Juve. Thorsby, Macias, Retegi, Malinowski. You've got four players there who all know the league well. And without wanting to sound like Paul Merson cliche, they know Serie A well. But it's true, they do.
Macias has already
chimed in with a goal. And Thorsby obviously was at Sampdoria, so I guess he doesn't need much time to settle in. And Malinowski, I always thought there's a player in there somewhere, he just needs the right environment. And Retegi's banging him in, so well done. Recruited well. Future Milan striker Matteo Retegi and future Milan head coach Alberto Gilardino. at the Marassi against us. Predictions?
This is tough because...
See,
they've taken points off, you know, decently good teams. They had the draw against Napoli early on, 2-2. Obviously, the 4-1 thrashing of Roma, which, to be fair, seems like everyone does now. But they also beat Lazio in the season opener. So, you know, maybe it's just us in Genoa, you know, that part of Italy that just owns the city of Rome. I don't know. But it seems like they're only performing well against the big clubs, which naturally means we're losing this game. I'm still going to predict a win, but it's just off vibes, to be honest with you.
I love a vibes win. No, I love a vibes win. Yeah, I think my gut is saying actually a draw in this game, to be perfectly honest, but I don't want to be pessimistic, Ollie, because I don't like predicting anything other than a win unless it's glaringly obvious that it's not going to happen. So I'm going to go with a 1-0. Nice and simple, but I do actually think they'll score. I think it'll be a 1-1. That's what my gut's telling me.
Yeah, I'm going second straight 1-1 draw prediction. I really do think it's going to be.
Yeah, it is.
I think We've fallen foul of this thing again where we play on a Wednesday night in Germany and then we've got to play another away game on a Saturday. Yes. Like, there's not much time. We probably are going to rotate. I hadn't really factored that in, but Genoa will be up for it, well up for it, and their game plan seems to have worked well against against the bigger clubs. Well, Roman clubs, but you know what I mean. So I can see us dropping points in this one. Like, as much as I'd love us to go four in a row, keep rolling after that and go into those next Juve and Napoli games with momentum. Eventually, I think it's going to catch up with us, like in the intensity and the energy of what we're doing and a couple of injuries to the midfield here and there. It's there's got to be a point where it's like we have an off game and I can see it being against a team that makes it difficult for other teams. Fingers crossed I'm wrong. We'll do one question because obviously this has dragged on a little bit. When we've got four games to cover, we can't unfortunately go through the big list of questions as we normally do because it would be too long. Christian Espinosa is one that I like this week, so we'll go with it. We might do the others as a bonus episode. We'll see about that for this week. But Christian Espinosa asks, what are Pioli's best and worst traits as a head coach? I like this. Character assassination.
Yeah, this is the one word. Well, his best trait naturally is that he's bald. You know, bald men are top people, so that's what I'm picking for that. And his worst trait,
anyone can be bald. Though it's not really a trait, is it?
Shaven.
Hey, man, this took a lot of work. Okay. I think his worst trait, his stubbornness. You know, I think he's very stuck in his ways. I don't even care so much about the I won't apologize to the fans about the derby thing because, I don't know, people feel some type of way about it. But to me, it's more so he just refuses to not use the players he's comfortable with. You know, try something new. Take a risk. Not to say he doesn't do it every now and then, but in this season, he's actually improved on that a lot. But last season, like, we never saw Adley, obviously. We didn't see a lot of players for a while. And of course I'm blanking on everything right now, but consistently same 11. Then all of a sudden we're making these changes towards the late stage of the Champions League. We're dropping points left and right in Serie A. So maybe that's a good thing actually. I don't know. That's what I'm going with, I guess.
I've gone for his best trait being his supreme espresso sip. It's elite. Mm. The way he sips the espresso is, I mean, he's Italian, but, you know, come on.
Honduras, isn't it?
It's up there. No, I think from a practical point of view, I think if you want me to assess his actual manager, I do think he's a very good man manager. So person to person, I do think he excels. It's very evident that he's got a good relationship with every single one of the players. I think that's what he excels at. And then similar to what you just said, Torbjörn, I think what he's really bad at is stubbornness slash arrogant. I think he's a little bit arrogant for a manager that isn't, for me, a top coach. He's a great coach, but he's not top. And I think the arrogance, which often comes across as stubbornness in what he does, is, for me, yeah, his major downfall.
Mm-hmm. Good point. I was going to say his best trait is his ability to dig us out of a crisis. And I think that is still largely true, but I just think back to the January and it lasted for 7 games and like it threw our season into massive jeopardy. And then we had another dip in March in the league and that came from an inability to manage the players that he had. So I can't really say that. I was going to say the way that he develops individuals. There's a long list of players that he's definitely made better without a doubt. And they've played a key role in the development and a lot of the players that we consider the young core today. But then you've got the list of players from last season who just didn't get a sniff. And then he relied on the same 13-14. We then didn't have a backup plan. We dropped points. The rest is history. So I guess I'll say his sort of tactical innovations. And I don't mean the formation changes because I think anyone could see moving to a 4-3-3 this season was logical. But just the little in-game things that he's brought to try and vary our threat. The fullbacks inverting, having midfielder push up, having, you know, wingers alternate. There's a variety of different. Maignan as a deep lying playmaker, finally having the bottle to play Adley the way that he has. there's a variety of things, but just keeping things fresh, because it can be, you look at a team like Inter, for example. Inzaghi has played the same way, the 3-5-2, for his entire tenancy there, and there's no signs of that stopping anytime soon. The only thing that changes are the players that are playing in each position, but the responsibilities are essentially the same. That's fine, and it's going to win them a lot of games because they're bloody good at playing that 3-5-2. However, every now and again, maybe like the Sassuolo game, it becomes predictable and teams can exploit it. Leads me to my negative for Pioli. The thing he's worst at is managing games against Inter. It's as simple as that. Like, he's got to find an antidote to that 3-5-2. It's not even a formational thing necessarily. It's become like a psychological thing. Like, we need to get over that hump, because you can't be losing game after game to your City rivals, unfortunately. That's one thing that he hasn't.
There's one thing I'd like to add, if that's okay, and I think you've all got comments on this, because I think we discussed it in the chat a couple days ago, maybe a week ago. Pioli's the only manager I've ever come across that is so slow to integrate new signings. I've never seen it ever like that before. There's all well and good, you get a young player who might be inexperienced, but not playing them for weeks. He has got better at this, but historically, can't think off the top of my head, but there are so many examples. He has done that. He's just waited and waited and waited. And every press conference, he keeps saying they need to get adapted to the system. What are you doing, mate? It's not rocket science. It really is not rocket science, right? So that's annoying. I'm sure you.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if that's the change from that, because I agree with you 100%. But this season, he's done so much better, bringing in Bartosaghi multiple times. Musa, Adley now, I mean, even Okafor is getting starts early on in the season. I'm wondering if that's instruction that's been given to him, like, hey, you got to start rotating some of these players more often, play the younger guys, like, this is the way we do it now, or something like that. I wonder, because you're right, you know, the last couple seasons, like, do any of you really think we would have seen Bartosaghi last season? No chance, you know? I mean, obviously,
Not Adley as a defensive midfielder. No.
Yeah.
They're not ready. They don't know the system. I mean, what you do on the training field every day, I don't get that.
We were reading between the lines with what happened over the summer, and I think what we've seen is, and what the theory was, has been proven to be true, in that a lot of the players that he was given from the market last season, he didn't actually see much use for at all. Mm-hmm. And this 2022 summer window will forever remain a sort of example of how not to follow up a Scudetto win. And then this summer, if it's true, and it seems like it is, that he had more responsibility and more say in the kind of players that we brought in, first game of the season and beyond that, three new signings straight into the starting 11, and we've seen more rotation that we didn't see this early in the season. So maybe there is something to that. Maybe he's finally got players that he trusts and that he's happy to put his faith in. But yeah, definitely a bit of stubbornness in there as well. We will wrap it up here, boys. Thank you to everybody who made it to the end of the episode. Hope that you think we're doing justice to the four games per episode thing. Wish we could split it up sometimes, but you know, it makes for an action-packed episode. Thank you to all our Substack founding members, Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Matt, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ and Mats. We'll be back with another bonus episode later this week, of course. And I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep. Thanks for having me. I'm forced to be here.
I'm
the co-host. I'm the editor. I do the posting. Yeah. Always fun. But Lorenzo, actually, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no, it's an absolute pleasure. It's nice to be back. Nice to make a representation. And nice to sort of get the B team bubbling away again.
Who knows? There might be a promotion in the future.
Who knows? Well, I can tell you, Steph is at the bottom of the rung of my team now. You know, his KPIs, he's not been following them. It's not been good. So,
yeah, there will be an opportunity next week, because I'm in Chicago, so I will not be on next week's episode. But I put faith in the boys in the second string to get a result regardless, and the pressure's on them now.
Pioli, look at you. What are you doing?
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, thank you for watching, everybody. They'll see you next week.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...